Welcome to In the Studio with a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock and roll albums.
Excuse me.
You're welcome.
Guitar up.
One, two, three.
I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, it's the all-important musical link between a cottage in Wales and a mountaintop in Kashmir on the fanniversary of Led Zeppelin III.
Of course, a lot of this stuff was written on acoustic anyway, apart from the things which were written from riffs through the amp. So here we are in the cottage in Wales, and we're coming up with all this stuff. And we're just going and start recording. And before we know where we are, we've got an album.
Yeah, but there was no restraint with the whole idea of being with or without an amplifier. I mean, we just did it whatever we wanted to do and said, look, for us, we had to just weave around wherever it was most appropriate. With amplifiers, without, it doesn't matter. In the desert, on the top of a Welsh mountain, wherever it was, which could be indicative and, you know, it could show what we were all about.
Welcome back to In the Studio for Led Zeppelin. I'm Robert Plant.
Hello there, this is Jimmy Page in the studio for Led Zeppelin with my very good friend Redbeard, or you better believe it.
By October 1970, the hierarchy of the rock and roll establishment had suddenly turned into so many musical chairs. The reigning monarchs for the last 6 years, the Beatles, had just abdicated the throne as the undisputed biggest band in the world. Their heirs apparent, the Rolling Stones, were now more notorious than famous, what with a series of drug busts, tax problems, Brian Jones drowning, and the fan murder at the Altamont concert. Jimi Hendrix's unparalleled talent was being siphoned off by a sort of creative, maybe even personal, identity crisis, as well as personnel and management changes for Hendrix. Who's Next was still 10 months off into the future from Townsend and Company, so the sound of British band Led Zeppelin, the hammer of the gods in the hands of guitarist-songwriter Jimmy Page, singer-lyricist Robert Plant, bass and keyboard player John Paul Jones, and powerhouse drummer John Bonham, it was undeniable. After only two Led Zeppelin albums, it seemed as though this London-based band lived on the road playing constantly in America, according to Led Zeppelin founder Jimmy Page.
Okay, so we've been doing this massive, all this touring, we've been working basically for a good, more or less, 2 years and having just a week off here and a week off there. And suddenly we've got, must have been about a month off or something, and maybe it was more than that, but Robert and I went, well, we invited everyone, but in the end it was Robert and I who went to this cottage in Wales to just, you know, cut off the road and just have a really nice sort of cool holiday, you know. And that's when we started writing Round the Fire, virtually. And that's where Three came from, all the acoustic stuff from there. Because obviously, you know, in a cottage in Wales, you can't set up, there wasn't any electricity, I don't think there. There wasn't electricity, no. No electricity. Since I've Been Loving You, yes, we did have that from before. And I can't remember where we rehearsed it first or anything. The next album now, we that is more leaning towards the stuff which, you see, of course, a lot of this stuff was written on acoustic anyway, apart from the things which were written from riffs through the amp. So here we are in the cottage in Wales, and we're coming up with all this stuff, and let's go in and start recording it. And before we know where we are, we've got an album.
Drive our ships to new land.
guitar players and gear sluts the world over are wetting their pants over that superb guitar tremolo, which we can now clearly hear on the alternate mix of the Immigrant Song. Robert Plant and Jimmy Page react to hearing it from the deluxe edition of Led Zeppelin III.
It's a real strong, powerful, and consummate. There's not a note wasted. And that's the other side of the long, extended, drawn-out, tangential music. That's the flip of the coin. Immigrant Song went for it. Evocative, colourful, scenic.
This version of Immigrant Song, it's an alternate mix of some of the parts. The vocals are different on the end, as everyone will notice, but it's a mix that was done en route, and it's different.
Writer Jerry McCulley busts them in his review, quote, "Ever the creative thieves, Zeppelin kick off the album by nicking the riff from Bally High, no less, to punctuate the thundering warhorse Immigrant Song." Robert Plant's family had a cottage in the Welsh countryside. Echoes of that place and time still reverberate in the music of Page and Plant. Jimmy weighs in first.
There are times in your life musically that really have a substantial effect upon you. It's like the very first time, really, when you started to hear like rock music and blues, but those sort of things, and there are musics and vibes of places which live with you forever. So they don't go. The mantle doesn't go. You just take more colours onto this mantle.
At a specific time.
Yeah, yeah.
We went to Wales originally because we'd been touring for month after month after month with Zeppelin 1 and 2. And when I was a kid, I used to go to this cottage, which was quite remote. I'm not by American standards, you know. It wasn't. But it was, for us, it was a complete change from what we'd been doing, which was constantly playing all these festivals. And
it's basically 2 years we were on, wasn't it?
Yeah. So without electricity and without all the trappings and no telephone and no this, that, the other, the whole deal was to have a break and see if we could really stimulate ourselves. Exactly what I was saying 10 minutes ago, 20 minutes ago, about we had to stretch it, and that's what we did. It had its moments, and at other times we would kind of draw in blanks, but at least, because from the very beginning of working together, the acoustic guitar had been there, whether it was on Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You or Your Time Is Gonna Come Through. So it was no big deal. It was just kind of important to get away from Whole Lotta Love and say, hey, well, and we also do this. We'll be right back.
Not until 1994's fabulous Page Plant Unleaded No Quarter reunion album and tour did I fully appreciate that song, Friends, as the all-important musical link between 1970's Led Zeppelin III and their groundbreaking double album 4 years and three studio albums later called Physical Graffiti, where Led Zeppelin would incorporate brilliantly the Moroccan music of North Africa with Indian classical musical influences, just as you heard there on Friends. Jimmy Page reminds us that he had been incorporating splashes of world music into Led Zeppelin from the outset.
Think about on the first album with Black Mountains, I got tabla drums on it. You know, so, I mean, I've been interested in Indian music, Arabic music, classical music, admittedly, all the way through, but all sorts of ethnic music, you know, gamelan music, you know. Gamelan, you hear that in Bali. Oh, I can't remember the names of the instruments that they use now. But it's only a 5 or 7 note scale. Very percussive stuff.
The fact that the song Whole Lotta Love from Led Zeppelin's 1969 second album had erupted from FM underground rock and crossed over to top 40 radio in America changed the perception and expectations of Led Zeppelin almost overnight. And that wild psychedelic breakdown midway through Whole Lotta Love with its purposely altered and shifted bowed guitar and Plant's yelps and screams, it all modified with a process called phasing and flanging. It was shaking up the button-down top 40 medium.
Well, we were well aware of what we were doing was, well, I know we were well aware that it was certainly unique, but so was that first album. Oh, totally very unique, you see. Oh, the phasing and flanging. It was a development of something that I had heard before, but it was put in there for good effect. There was phasing and flanging going on, and it was, I remember there was Eddie Kramer and I both doing all these rotary pots and moving the tapes and all this sort of stuff to get it, you know, almost environmental in some respects. I mean, when you listen to it on the headphones, it's suddenly, you know, it's taking you into another realm, you know. I suppose that established us, really. That established the whole thing, you know, the energy that was going on. We were shaping this way more into sort of the rock, you know, idiom, I suppose, as opposed to, as you say, on the earlier one, you know, the blues. Yeah, however, we've still got acoustic here on, thank you. Thank you's got acoustic on it, but still, anyway, the next album now, we that is more leaning towards the stuff which, you see, of course, a lot of this stuff was written on acoustic anyway, apart from the things which were written from riffs through the amp. So here we are in the cottage in Wales, and we're coming up with all this stuff, and so, right, you know, let's go in and start recording it. And before we know where we are, we've got an album.
Her face is cracked from smiling, all the fears that she's been hiding. And it seems that pretty soon, everybody's gonna know. We'll be right back.
from Led Zeppelin III. That's called Celebration Day. Next, Jimmy Page and Robert Plant will be joined in the studio by veteran recording engineer Terry Manning, who helped them all capture one of the greatest blues rock recordings of all time. I'm Redbeard, and you're in the studio.
Welcome back to In the Studio for Led Zeppelin. I'm Robert Plant.
Hello there. This is Jimmy Page in the studio for Led Zeppelin with my very good friend Redbeard. Oh, you better believe it.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. It is an honor. I asked first Jimmy Page and then Robert Plant to explain how acoustic sounds which took root in a Welsh cottage without electricity could sprout branches years later on such classic songs as Kashmir.
There are times in your life musically that really have a substantial effect upon you. It's like the very first time really when you started to hear like rock music and blues, but those sort of things, and there are musics and vibes of places which live with you forever. So they don't go. The mantle doesn't go. You just take more colours onto this mantle.
At a specific time.
Yeah, yeah.
We went to Wales originally because we've been touring for month after month after month with Zeppelin 1 and 2. And when I was a kid, I used to go to this cottage, which was quite remote. I'm not by American standards, you know. It wasn't. But it was, for us, it was a complete change from what we'd been doing, which was constantly playing all these festivals. And
it's basically 2 years we were on, wasn't it?
Yeah. So without electricity and without all the trappings and no telephone and no this, that, and the other, the whole deal was to have a break and see if we could really stimulate ourselves. Exactly what I was saying 10 minutes ago, 20 minutes ago, about we had to stretch it, and that's what we did. It had its moments, and at other times we would kind of draw in blanks, but at least because from the very beginning of working together, the acoustic guitar had been there, whether it was on Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You, or Your Time Is Gonna Come Through. So it was no big deal. It was just kind of important to get away from a whole lot of love and say, hey, and we also do this.
Well, even still on the second album, I'd started to write numbers around, or structure numbers around Bonzo's playing. So in other words, you've got things like Ramble On, and you leave it and then bring him in for effect. Again, you've got that on Hangman, for instance. You know, which is, I heard that by, it's a Leadbelly song, but I heard that by Fred Gerlach. I had that on the Folkways album, and that's another one, again, just like Babe, I'm Gonna Leave You, I thought, right, rearrange this one, it could be really, really good. And it was really good, yeah, it was really good. But you see, as much as that, the sort of structuring and such, bringing Bonzo's drums for effect at a point, and building the whole, so that the whole thing keeps building.
That was Jimmy Page affectionately talking about the song he calls Hangman. It's Gallows Pole from Led Zeppelin 3, on which he played banjo for the first time, totally self-taught. There's a 0 to 100 miles per hour blues rock benchmark on Zeppelin's third album called Since I've Been Loving You, which was written by Jimmy Page, bass guitarist, keyboard player John Paul Jones, and singer, lyricist Robert Plant. Here's Robert with me in the studio.
I've been in blues bands since I was 15 years old, so... As naive as it may have been, I was with other people who had a like attitude. So they were thinking and listening to the blues, Big Bill Brunsey, Lead Belly, Sonny Terry, Brownie McGee, a lot of country blues, and then exposed to the city blues of the Howlin' Wolf, Little Walter stuff, you know, Buddy Guy. Blues was had an incredible resurgence in the mid-60s in Britain. And it was as powerful as pop music. It was great, really, when you think about it.
tears, it felt like rain. Don't you hear that?
A jaw-dropping guitar solo from Jimmy Page on 1970's Since I've Been Loving You. And recording engineer Terry Manning says Page did it in one take. And I'm not the first person who noticed that Robert Plant's stuttering, dynamic vocal abandon bears no small resemblance to a singer who was at the peak of her powers in 1970, Janis Joplin. Did you notice at the beginning of the song that, now with digital remastering, you can clearly hear John Bonham's bass drum pedal squeaking in the soft musical interludes? Veteran recording engineer Terry Manning, who befriended Jimmy Page during the Yardbirds days and then assisted Page in making Led Zeppelin III at Arden Studio in Memphis, Terry says he's not surprised to hear Bonzo's drum pedal squeak to the beat.
Well, that's not uncommon. Most of them do. Most of them make some horrible noises. Then a lot of times we'll be down there with bits of tape or WD-40 or whatever to try to stop it. But part of the reason of that is that John did not like to be close mic'd the way that a lot of drums subsequently were done and are still done today. Engineers will go in, and I've done this at times myself, but they'll go in and put one or even two mics on every drum. Every tom-tom has a top and a bottom mic on it. The snare will have maybe two mics on top and a mic underneath. The bass drum will have at least one, sometimes two or three mics on it. Then there'll be overhead mics maybe 4 feet back and more overhead mics for room mic sound, maybe 10 or 12 feet back, or maybe one way back in a room somewhere. That's not the way John liked it. What he would say is, look, no engineer is going to change the balance or the of my drums. If I want a drum louder, I'll just blank and play it louder. And if I want it softer, I'll play it softer. And if I want the bass drum to come out, then I'll play the bass drum harder. So it was actually a bit of a trick he wanted one mic. So you would say things like, well, this is stereo. We might need two, or, you know. And I think there was eventually some convincing done to have a one mic added onto the bass drum just to get a little extra punch. But I don't know of more than three mics ever being used, which is pretty much unheard of today. But that contributes to hearing extraneous noises within the drums.
The cottage in Wales to which Page and Plant retreated was known as Branwar. Bran is Welsh for hill. The pastoral setting allowed Jimmy and Robert to woodshed albums not only for their next album, but as it turned out, for years to come.
Yeah, well, in fact, you see, yes, it started off there It started off in Wales, but in fact now I'm looking at this, a lot of the stuff I had, I remember going up to Robert's house and Bonzo was there, and we ran through on the same day from the riffs that I had, Immigrant Song, Friends, Bonzo would just happen to be over that day when we were there, and yeah, Tangerine was something I'd had written from before, but That's the Way, and Bron Ra's Stomp, or at least a major proportion of Bron Ra's Stomp, and the instrumental Bron Ra, which comes out later in another album. There were things that were written there at that cottage which come out later too.
Really?
Yeah, well, it got developed later anyway.
But Robert Plant cautions us not to get fixated on the mechanics of their creative process, but rather the spirit.
Yeah, but there was no restraint with the whole idea of being with or without an amplifier. I mean, we just did it whatever we wanted to do and said, look, for us, we had to just weave around wherever it was most appropriate. With amplifiers, without, it doesn't matter. In the desert, on the top of a Welsh mountain, wherever it was, which could be indicative and, you know, it could show what we were all about, were and are.
Real stuff.
That's Led Zeppelin with Out on the Tiles, which is English slang for A Night on the Town. With John Bonham's drumming, described by writer David Frick, that sounds like a drunk tumbling down a flight of stairs. Up next, we'll hear one of the most collectible B-sides in rock and roll, which came from these very same sessions. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with Page and Plant for the 5th anniversary of Led Zeppelin 3.
Welcome back to In the Studio for Led Zeppelin. I'm Robert Plant.
Hello there. This is Jimmy Page in the studio for Led Zeppelin with my very good friend Redbeard. Oh, you better believe it.
Thank you again, Jimmy.
I'm not too bad at doing that on stringed instruments. I can do that on it's like the banjo. I mean, I'd never played the banjo before on Hangman. And I thought it was Jones's again, another instrument that was there. But, I hadn't played the banjo before either, but... So, in fact, you know, there were magical times, you can say, as far as inspiration went.
The basic tracks for Led Zeppelin 3 were recorded at Headley Grange Hall using the Rolling Stones mobile truck, and at Island and at Olympic Studios, both in London. Overdubs were done in the U.S. at Ardent Studio in Memphis, where Jimmy Page, Led Zeppelin manager Peter Grant, and Page's friend from the Yardbirds touring days, engineer Terry Manning, were huddled in the studio.
It was Peter Grant, Jimmy Page and me, who were there at the in the control room at Arden Studio, and just totally doors locked, listening to the whole album, choosing where things would be edited, what could be left in or taken out, what should be mixed louder or lower, and just watching Jimmy so into it. He was so vital and such an incredibly deep and intelligent person, and he would just be enthralled listening to the music. His eyes would be just off somewhere else, and his shoulders would be shimmying and shaking right into the beat, and I'll never forget that image. He was just so intensely involved in the creation of this music.
Jimmy Page is quick to point out that he had his mentors too. There was William Burroughs, the Adding Machine heir who became a beat-era author of Naked Lunch, from which Donald Fagen and Walter Becker would borrow the term Steely Dan as their band name, by the way. William Burroughs sought out Jimmy Page after hearing the song Friends on Led Zeppelin 3, as Burroughs prepared a lengthy article in counterculture magazine Crawdaddy. Burroughs was hearing the influence of the Arab music of Berber tribes of North Africa in certain Led Zeppelin songs, according to Jimmy Page.
Yeah, well, William Burroughs was the one who, I mean, I'd heard it, but he was the one who said, you know, you're so close to what they're doing over there. I mean, I'd heard them. In fact, more than the Berber tribesmen, I'd heard more of the sort of Khartoum type of Arab music, you know, the orchestrated stuff. But he said to me, you should really get right into that sort of Moroccan stuff. Yes, it was Burroughs who he did a whole thing in this magazine, Crawdaddy. And it was a fabulous man to meet, so interesting. But I was just an instrument for him to really write on rock and riff music, you know. And he was dead right, though. I tell you what, the amazing thing about it was he says, oh, you use flat and fifths a lot, don't you? And I said, yeah, that's right. I said, what do you play? He said, I don't play music. I worked it out mathematically from the Pythagoras system, which is all. And I thought, oh, my God, here we go. This is amazing. He'd worked it out mathematically. Yeah. I use flat and fifths, and he didn't play an instrument. I said, oh, come on, you put me on. He said, no, seriously, you know about Pythagoras? I said, yes, I do. And it fascinates you. Yeah, you bet your life, boy. Fabulous. One of the most important people I met, really, Burroughs. They wanted me to. They said he'd been to see a few of the shows in the past. He was well acquainted with what we were doing before he did this actual interview. Yeah, and I was really honoured to be part of something like that. Actually, even though I realised when I read it afterwards, you know, that it was just an instrument really for him to write about rock. But what he wrote was fabulous.
Never the seller that their first, second, or certainly their blockbuster fourth album turned out to be. Nevertheless, Led Zeppelin 3 was a turning point for the band in ways both good and not so good. A final word from Jimmy Page.
And as I say, then we started to take things at our own pace here from this point on. And also, when the record company received that, there was a lot of feedback to the manager. Well, why isn't there another Whole Lot of Love? Well, the reason was because we're not going to do another Whole Lot of Love. We're just going to keep ever onward, you know, just keep it. It's New Horizons, and that's, you know, New Horizons are, you know, back down the track.
That's Led Zeppelin with the Hey Hey What Can I Do song, recorded during the sessions for Led Zeppelin III, but strangely left off the album. For decades, it was only available as the B-side to the single Immigrant Song. To answer the long-running speculation, I asked Jimmy Page directly if there are any unreleased Led Zeppelin songs waiting in the vaults.
Oh, no. 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 There was another track, two tracks, actually, that never found their way onto there. It was just with Steve Winwood and myself. It was something called The Bells, and it was this weird instrumental with acoustic and organ, and it never got any further than any extra guitars on it. And there was another one which was sort of, I suppose you could say, it wasn't like Time's on My Side, you know, the Stones thing. It wasn't like that, but that sort of vein. It was a slow ballad, you know, with a soul type of ballad. That sort of thing Solomon Burke used to do, you know. And that never found light of day. That tape disappeared altogether. I don't know where that ever went. No, because I tried to collect them all together when we did Coda, to put all these things together. But unfortunately, that had gone the way of many of my possessions, probably on the bootleg market, but I don't know.
This is Red Beard in the studio, thanking my guests Robert Plant, John Paul Jones, and Jimmy Page. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2014. All rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and for more, visit inthestudio.net.